My name is Daryl. I'm an alcoholic. I was at a going away for Luis's mom last night, and a bunch of us were there, and I was telling one of my stories of my past. And when I was 16, I was a little criminal. I mean, I started breaking in houses when I was 14. Well, when I was 16, I broke in this house one night, and I got in the house, and I fell, and I tripped on something, and it squished, and so I turned the light on. It was a dead body. So the woman had been dead for 2 weeks. So I got up, and I hauled ass for the front door, and the little bell boxes that are on the back of the door, I hit it, and it knocked me back a bit, and I spun around. I saw her purse sitting right there on the table, and I thought, should I? You know, that's the alcoholic in me. You know, the difference between breaking in houses and alcoholism or booze, I was able to equate the fact that I found the body because I broke into the house. But I was never able to equate the fact that I got arrested, I got beat out. Ooh, I'm not supposed to cuss. I got the crap beat out of me. I went to jail. I did all this stuff. But the difference was I was never able to equate the fact that it was because of alcohol. Now, if I'd have been able to equate like I did with the dead body, maybe my life would have been different. But that's alcoholism for me, right? Cunning, baffling, powerful. So tonight, thank you.
Thank you.
Right to the next. Boom, that's the alcoholic too. Let's get past this moment to the next one. So Melanie is our speaker tonight, and I met Melanie when she first came in. She's become a good friend of mine, and she's just a dear person. I just love her to death. She's got a great program. She's one of those people who came in and was willing to do the work. So with no further ado, here's Melanie.
My name is Melanie, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is December 8th, 2011, and Central is my home group. And I don't have any dead body stories, so we'll try and keep this rolling. I was born in West Virginia in a little town to my parents, obviously, Nancy and Dan. My mom was a secretary, and my dad was a banker. And I have a younger sister who... if there was a black sheep, that was me. She was one of those that I wish I could be, but I just didn't have it in me. I don't think I really had a desire to follow that straight, narrow path. I think before I even took a drink of alcohol, I was already in the ism. I, self, and me, everything revolved around me. She got braces. I wanted braces because I wanted the attention. I mean, this is how my life went. Like I said, small town in West Virginia, it really wasn't like a bad childhood, but when I first came in here, if you'd asked me, my perception was so messed up, can I say screwed? that I would have told you that it was horrible, that I, you know, poor me. That's how everything went for me. Thanks to Alcoholics Anonymous, my perception is much different now. But let me go back. I probably took my first sip of alcohol when my grandmother gave me white lightning, if anyone knows what that is, because I had a cough. And then every time I went to grandma's, I had a cough. Yay! Yeah. Good times. I didn't, you know, it's like, I liked the way it made me feel. I didn't get drunk or anything, but I knew that this thing was something that I wanted to be around. Childhood was pretty normal. I went to, you know, the same elementary school. We had one elementary school, one junior high, one high school. So everyone I was with in elementary school, we kind of went all the way through. I got a little mischievous when I was about 15. I was one of those kids that I wanted to be perfect. I wanted everything to fit in this nice little box because that way mom and dad would be happy. So I did whatever I thought that they would like, which was being a majorette, being a cheerleader, being a drum major, being on student council. All the meanwhile, on the weekends, I was hanging out with the bad crowd. I wanted to smoke at the bleachers like all the other cool kids, and I didn't do that. I tried to be nice to a lot of people because I wanted everybody to like me. And I did a lot of things because I wanted people to like me. And if I wanted to fit in your group, I was going to be like you. But the minute you turned your back, I wanted to be like these people. And I would do whatever you were doing so I would fit in. The theme is I never really felt like I fit in anywhere. I chased that for quite a long time until I came into the rooms. Like I said, I probably started drinking around 14, turning 15. I had some older friends, and being in a small town, there wasn't a whole lot to do during the week, but on the weekends, someone always had a party. There was always something to do, and it always involved alcohol. I don't really remember the first time I got drunk, but I do remember the consequences of quite a few weekends. I would always lie to my parents and say I was at someone's house when I really wasn't. I was usually off in the parking lot with somebody because they had something that I wanted, and it usually involved alcohol. I would skip the movies, go drink, and then there was a little plaza. And there was a movie theater, and then in between the movie theater and the next door, they were doing construction, so you could go all the way through it. I told my friends, I said, oh, my gosh, the movie's already out. Let's go around, because my parents were picking me up. Give me all your, I think it was Hubba Bubba, you know, bubble gum. So I had, like, three pieces of Hubba Bubba. If you know how big that is, I was chewing like crazy, thinking that that was going to mask all the alcohol that I'd consumed. And I didn't realize because it was so dark that when they dropped me off to get through, there were, like, cinder blocks. So all the way through, I'm stumbling. I'm, like, skinning my knees and everything else. So imagine, well, what'd you do at the movies to skin your knees? They pulled up, and I hopped in the car. I was in a lot of trouble. I continued that every weekend. Of course, I always said, that was bad. I am not doing that again. And the minute someone said, hey, this is what we're doing this weekend, I'm like, where, when, how am I going to get there? I couldn't wait. You know, I lived from Monday to hurry up. I had my weekend planned. There were several times when I ended up in places not knowing where I was or who I was with. And the parents were kind of getting a little bit tired of the consequences. I tried to calm it down a little bit. I mean, at that point, I hadn't crossed the line. So I could, maybe only go out 2 weekends a month. But when I went out, it was, all hell was breaking loose. One night I came home, I was probably a senior in high school, and I remember opening up the side door and my dad sitting in the kitchen with the light on, with a bottle of something that one of his banker friends, my dad and my parents really don't drink. I mean, they might have a cocktail once a year if they're at someone's house that has a alcohol. But they weren't big drinkers. But because my dad was a banker, some of his customers at the holidays always gave him Jack Daniels or a big bottle of this or a big bottle of that, and he always kept it in the basement. So that was my favorite place to go during the summer. because my parents worked, I was able to raid the liquor cabinet as much as I wanted, and I figured out how to mix some things and add water to things, and, you know, Coke looks a lot like that dark stuff I was drinking. I didn't care what it was, as long as it gave me the effect that I was looking for. I didn't want to feel. I didn't want to geel. That's where I wanted to be. I enjoyed all that. I mean, I wanted to be someone else. I wanted to be somewhere else. And that's what alcohol did for me. But anyway, I remember going, crawling, literally on hands and knees through the side door, looking up and seeing my dad with one of those bottles from downstairs. And he, said, do you think you're grown up? And I said, no. He said, well, we're going to see how grown up you are. So then he proceeded to pour me a big drink. And I sat there until I drank it all. That didn't stop me. That was just like, I'll do it just because. But then tomorrow it will be better, and I won't do it next weekend. I mean, the repeated theme is always when I'd wake up, I'm not going to do that again, and then I would do it again. Not right away, but eventually. When I went to college, it was a town about 2 hours away from where I grew up, and I was 17 when I went in. This was, oh, I can't even say that. Shiznit. I really look forward to being on my own, because then I could have as much alcohol as I wanted without having the parents waiting up for me or the consequences that, you know, they were going to give me. I look back now, I'm like, sure, I had lots of consequences, but then I didn't care. I got into school and was in the dorm, and I quickly found people that drank like me, and I didn't have the ID to get into some of the clubs, but somehow I got a hold of one, and I was going out quite frequently. I joined a sorority, and even then, I thought, well, maybe once I'm in with this crowd, things will be different, because my grades had already started to suffer. I drank myself out of the sorority because I was drinking almost every day, and I was flunking out of school, and to be in the sorority, I had to have a certain grade point average, blah, blah, blah. Parents stepped in and said, you're going to an apartment by yourself off campus, and I thought, okay, this is my chance. I'm going to move, and it'll be different. I won't be around these people. It'll be different, but I had a car, and I was able to go to places where these people were, and that's what I did. I continued to fail classes, tell teachers, make excuses why I wasn't in class, please let me make up the work, until the parents stepped in again and said, that's enough. You're out of school until you figure out what you're doing with your life. But by this time, I was like hooked up with a boy that I went to high school with, and he asked me to marry him, and he was moving to Chicago. So I'm like, great, Chicago, I'll move, and things will be different. And I moved, and they were not different. They got worse. And I got a job. After I went for a semester in school, I was in the area. I didn't actually go to classes, but I was getting the money sent to me so I could, you know, go to school. I don't really remember how that worked out. I just remember I had all the money I needed to drink as much as I wanted. My husband at the time was going to school. He wasn't really around, so he didn't see all the stuff that I was doing. I got a job in a dental office, and then I found out that the doctor, how cool is this, would give us his credit card, and then me and the girls would go, it was in an up, like, third floor, and downstairs, one place over, was a bar, and we would go and spend as much as we wanted, drink as much as we wanted, and till one night I got in my car, and I was going home, and I T-boned somebody. I, to this day, have no idea why I wasn't arrested. I very well should have been. I remember having a court date, but I worked for a really nice Italian dentist, and he in a kind of a small suburb, so I think he kind of had connections. So I did not have a consequence to that, per se. I ended up moving back to West Virginia, got a divorce, thought I had my crap together, and I said, I'm going to school. I want to be a dental hygienist. And I, for 2 years, well, a year and a half, I was on the straight and narrow. You know, studying was, you know, what it was all about. This was my ticket out. Then I could move to wherever I wanted. And then I got close to one of my fellow students who said, hey, let's do this in addition to alcohol. And I said, that's really cool. I've always wanted to do that, and no one's ever presented it. So things got mixed in with the alcohol from that point. Got a divorce shortly after, moved to Florida in 92. Moved in with my aunt and thought, this is great. Now I'm an adult, you know, I'm grown up. I'm in another state. I've moved again. It'll be different. Let's see what happens. I started drinking again because I had a little period where I wasn't. And from that point, the aunt that I moved in with had passed away. So, again, I go looking for someone else to fill the void, get married again. Got pregnant and had my daughter. And after that, I really started drinking. I was not happy in the marriage. And I was starting to drink every day. I don't know how I kept my job. I don't know how I didn't kill someone, because by this time I was driving around drinking, you know, with my alcohol in the car. And I got pregnant again, had my son. I was on my way to the divorce lawyer, and I was like, oh, I don't feel so good. Let me take a test. I found out I was pregnant. So I hung around unhappy, and the only way I knew how to deal with that was to drink more. My ex-husband and I, we started drinking the same, meaning, you know, the six-pack that we bought wasn't going to cut it. Then the cases weren't cutting it. Then it went to, let me see how much alcohol content's in this wine. That didn't do it. And then it went on to hard liquor, plus a lot of other substances. I moved back to West Virginia, got a divorce. I move a lot. Came back to Florida, had my kids with me. At this point, I saw, of course, I'm going to, because this is what I do, I see he's an alcoholic because he drinks way too much. And I'll be darned if the kids go with him. So part of me is saying I'm not like him. Part of me is saying I might be like him, but I'm going to try and be on the straight and narrow because I want to keep my kids. I did that for 6 years, fought. I mean, that was my whole focus. I mean, I think when I didn't have alcohol, I needed something to obsess about, and that was my mission, was I'm going to get him, blah, blah, blah. It's all, you know, look what he did to me, blah, blah, blah. Really what it boils down to is I wasn't drinking, and now I understand what a dry drunk is because I was a raving lunatic. I tried to commit suicide. And I was Baker acted. The kids were little, and I remember it was around Thanksgiving because I was like, 3 days? I don't want to be here 3 days. I've got Thanksgiving. You know, I'm like, I could start drinking and cook the turkey and blah, blah, blah. I've got things to do. Somehow I think I did make it out before dinner was served, but I don't really remember. They put me on some medicine for depression because I lied about my drinking. I was not going to tell you how much I drank. I'm depressed. If you had my life, you'd be depressed, too. And I was always trying to cover it up. Years went on. I did try and commit suicide 2 other times. And by this time, my ex had sobered up. And he came and got the kid. Well, he came and got the kids briefly, but I got him back somehow, blah, blah, blah. When I really got into the daily drinking, I was in another relationship in another town, from Naples to Fort Myers to Cape Coral to Fort Myers. Eventually I ended up here. But at one point during my drinking, my kids were in the way. As hard as I wanted them with me in the beginning, my drinking took over. Alcohol was my master. I didn't care who got hurt. All I knew is if I couldn't get my drink, then all hell was breaking loose. I called my mom. I made up some sob story. I'm in a relationship that's very abusive, blah, blah, blah. My kids don't need to be here. And I shipped them off to live with my mom. And I told her it was just going to be for the summer. But I knew as soon as I sent them away, I was like, yes, I can drink like I want. And I went crazy. They didn't stay with her for just the summer because I wasn't ready to stop drinking. School year started. I said, why don't you enroll them in school? That's where I went to high school. I mean, elementary school. They'll be great up there. It's a small town, blah, blah, blah. I really just didn't want to have them back because I didn't want them interfering with my drinking. Like I said, my ex-husband got sober. He moved in with my mom. I was down here in Florida. They had guardianship, and eventually my ex-husband got custody of my kids. I still, at that point, didn't care because it was all about me and drinking. What I didn't plan on was when I moved from Cape Coral here to Orlando. Because there was so much stuff going on down there, I needed a new town because I needed new people, like new blood. It was like getting old, drinking with the same people, and having the same consequences. So I moved to Orlando. I moved 3 blocks away. I picked this house out. I was like, this is great. I drove down 50, and I saw this building with this circle and this triangle, and I'm like, what in the world is that witchcraft? I'm like, the parking lot is sometimes always packed, and there's people outside. I'm like, whatever. I moved in August, the beginning of August, and I went out one night. By this time, I was drinking at home. Because someone else was drinking. I didn't know anyone out here. But my main goal was to meet people who would party like me so I could start all over. The police had another idea, and my higher power, I totally believe, had another idea. I really needed banged in the head with a major consequence and something I couldn't outmove or outrun. And that's when I got my DUI. I was out at a bar. My blood alcohol content that night was 0.198, I think. And I spent a night in jail, crying like a baby. Oh, I'm not, I don't need to be here. I shouldn't be here. This cheese still has a wrapper on it. when I got out, they're like, you've got to do this and you've got to do that. And I'm like, sure, I can do that. Go to the little course that you got to do. And then I get in there and they're like, we're going to, like, put this thing in your mouth, you know, touch it for alcohol sometime, you'll be random. I'm like, how many days do I have to be here? 2? Okay, cool, I could do that. But I'm telling you, that first night, I wanted to drink so bad, I couldn't hardly stand it. But I kept hearing this thing, it's like, no, just do what they say. And I'm like, okay. I go the next day, I don't get tested, but then they say this little questionnaire. I think that was the first time I was totally honest with myself about my drinking. Like I said, I'd hit it. I'd lied about it. It was everything else that was wrong in my life. But I only drink like 3 drinks a week, right? So when I was answering the questionnaire, I remember before I went, my partner at the time said, just be honest. And I took a deep breath, and I was like, you know what? I'm freaking tired. I'm really tired, and I don't want to wake up tomorrow wanting to die. I don't want to go to bed wanting to die, and I don't know any way out. I'll be honest. And so I answered the questionnaire, and I got to the counselor, well, the lady that was telling me what I needed to do, and she said, you might want to go. In fact, you're going to have to go to 2 AA meetings a week, in addition to counseling at somewhere else. I'm like, okay. I'm like, 2 meetings a week. Okay, 2 days a week, then I won't drink. Like I said, I got my DUI in August. I came into rooms in December. So I was still, you know, playing with the whole I can control it thing, you know, so I don't get in trouble. And then toward the end, it was like a little bit of fear because I didn't want to get, you know, any more consequences. But I did that. I called the hotline, and I was like, do you have any gay meetings? And I was like, oh, okay, I'll go to that one. I had it all planned out. I had what I was going to wear. I knew when to be there. And I went, and it was a room full of men. And I heard my story, even though I wasn't a man. And I heard someone else's thoughts that were my thoughts when I was drinking, how I felt when I was drinking, how I felt when I wasn't drinking. I mean, I heard it all. But mostly what I heard that night was keep coming back. They gave me a newcomer's packet. I have not opened it. I never did. But I had a number on the back, and I'm like, why is this guy trying to pick me up? So I came back to another meeting the next day. I'm just now one day in the room, so it's still all about me. So I get to my second meeting. And it was here, because when the one thing I did look at was the meeting guide, and I was like, who would have thought I moved 3 blocks away from that witchcraft place that was actually an AA meeting. And then I saw, because by this time, you know, I came up here on unemployment. I didn't have my car because they took my license. And I'm like, okay, 2 AA meetings. I'm like, well, I went to one yesterday. I'll go to one today. You know, it's like I'm trying to build it up so that it'll last me a little bit. But when I came in here, it was a noon meeting the first time I was here. I sat over here, and some of the regulars that come to the noon, there's, you know, the regular people over here. That there was a little lady with gray hair, so cute and tiny. And I remember sharing, crazy sharing, saying how I wanted to die. I can't imagine my life without alcohol. How am I going to have fun anymore? This sucks. And I remember she came up to me and she said, honey, you're in the right place. You're home. Keep coming back. I'll see you tomorrow. And I'm like, yeah, I think you will, because what I heard here is I heard hope. There were people laughing and they weren't drinking, and I couldn't put the two together because I sat here so like sad and angry, and more angry at myself. And then I came back and I heard, you know, heard my story, you know, from different people. They said, get a sponsor, work the steps, get a home group. And I sat here. I was one of those, just like a sponsor. I'm like, I don't know. Maybe I will. Okay, I don't know who. But by this time, I'd befriended someone who was in the rooms for double digits. And they suggested that I talk to this girl who happens to be here tonight. And she helped save my life because she became my sponsor and showed me that I can still have fun and I don't have to have a drink no matter what. And no matter what kind of craziness is in my head, she's going to love me anyway. And I really believed in the beginning. I believed because she believed. I believed that I could have a life when I didn't want a life before. I didn't want that life, but I didn't know what other life there was. And I came in, and I remember my first sober outing. Like I said, it was December 8th, and they're like, you're going to a cookie exchange. I'm like, really? Like, a cookie exchange? Isn't that what old people at church do? I don't see them having fun. Oh, gosh. And they're like, yeah, and you're going to make cookies, and this is what you're bringing? And I'm like, okay. Whatever you all do, I will do. Because I got a glimpse of what my life could be like. And I made the cookies, and I get requested now for every Christmas to make the same cookies. It's crazy. And I had the most fun. I came to a meeting the day after. My stomach hurt. It wasn't because I ate too many cookies. I was laughing. I was laughing so hard, and I wasn't drunk. And it was really, really an awesome feeling to know that, you know, as lame as I thought that sounded, I'm so glad I went, because it showed me that I can have fun, I can have a life. And whatever it is that you all were doing works for you. It might work for me if I give it a chance, because I suffer from this condition also of being a human being. And my free will sometimes is like, I don't know. How bad is that alcoholic life, you know? But when I went through the steps for step one, by that time, I kind of got the powerless part, because I realized that every time I said I wasn't going to drink, it could be 8 o'clock in the morning, it could be noon, whatever. It was just a few hours later that I would convince myself that the night before wasn't that bad. I really wasn't that big of a jerk. One drink isn't going to hurt. It's just going to calm me down, you know. And before I knew it, I was right back to the same place I was the night before. I didn't know. I was in denial about unmanageability. I'm like, well, even though I got my DUI, I had no car, I was not employed. I'm like, you know, it's not that bad. You know, I didn't have my kids. You know, all this stuff that my sponsor helped me, you know, realize in that fog. that comes along with getting sober for me. I had to have help. I knew that I could not do it by myself. As many times as I said, I got this, I know what I'm doing, I realized when I came in here, there's a sign that says you're not alone anymore. For me, I thought this is great. That means, you know, I don't have to suffer through this. But I didn't know that I'm not alone because you all know exactly what I'm talking about, and you will help me. Even now, it's not about the drink. It's about life, and no matter what I'm going through, you're here for me. I mean, you all loved me before I could even think about loving myself because I had such hatred for who I'd become. But I got the unmanageability, and I came to believe that a power greater than me could restore me to sanity. I didn't know what that sanity looked like, but I believed it because my sponsor believed it, and the people in the rooms believed it. I made a decision to turn my will and my life over. And for me, that was finally letting something, it was the rooms at that point, someone else do my thinking. I'm not a good thinker. I might think I've got great ideas, but I've learned now I've really got to run that by at least one person, if not many. And I'm not searching for someone to co-sign my BS. It's just that that's sometimes how I'm so stubborn. I like to hold on to stuff still that I need beat over the head again until something changes. When I made my inventory, I kind of dug my feet a little bit. Because when I thought about putting something on paper, it made it too permanent. And I was afraid my partner at the time would see it. I finally just took a deep breath and asked that power that's bigger than me to just help me. That's been my biggest prayer all along is, help me. Please help me. In the morning, it's, you know, help me stay sober. At night, it's thank you for keeping me sober. You know, help live. Let me help someone else, if it's your will, the whole nine yards. When I wrote out everything, and I wasn't real nervous about telling someone because I'm usually pretty chatty and, like, almost divulge too much. So, but that one part at the end where it's like, did you leave anything out? I'm like, oh, stuff was just falling out that I hadn't even really thought about. But when I left, I felt so relieved. I think that is really when things changed for me. I felt a connection to, number one, another human being in a way that I'd never allowed before. And more importantly, to that power greater than myself. That's when the connection started. That's when I started to see, you know, the light bulbs were coming on. And knowing now, with the help of a sponsor, because I, you know, couldn't see all my character defects, because I'm not that bad. but there was quite a long list. I look at it often, because there's these things called shortcomings that pop up still. Making the list of the people I'd harmed, you know, that was another necessary step, and I'm all along I've been willing to do whatever it takes and really jumped in because, number one, I didn't want to die and I didn't want to drink again. Making the amends, I made the most difficult one that I thought was going to be horrible first, and without, you know, wondering what the outcome was going to be, and you know, there's still some that'll pop up now because, you know, things are still being revealed to me. I'm like, oh, I've got to look at that. Doing the 10, 11, and 12, some of the biggest joys that I have today are talking to a newcomer, introducing myself, holding the door, being here, being available, being present, taking someone else through the steps because someone was so gracious with their time to help me. It's like I have to give back. I have to help someone else. I want to be an example of the program today. I want to be an example of a human being today. These are things that were not in my vocabulary. I could have cared less. I was already decided that, you know, I was going to be a drunk, and I was going to be, you know, this horrible person. And today I don't want to be like that. And things have changed. My attitude toward things have changed. I mean, I remember the first time I was sitting over there, and it dawned on me something that had happened a few days before, and I was like, I didn't react the way I normally would have. And I'm like, I don't know where that came from. And I was telling someone, they're like, it's your higher power. And I'm like, oh. I was like, oh, I get it. I'm like, my higher power does for me still what I cannot do for myself. Because if I thought too much about this particular thing, what Melanie wanted to say and do was not what happened. Sometimes I have to stop and think. I'm like, I don't know when things change, but I know that they've changed. I'm not real good about timelines, like when something happens. Some people are. I'm not one of those people. All I know is I approach life differently. I enjoy life. I wake up in the morning, and I'm so thankful to be awake. I didn't know what gratitude really was. In the beginning, someone's like, you know, be grateful for, you know, X amount of things. I'm like, okay. And it starts off with a bed to sleep in, a shower, soap. You know, I went through, I'm in the shower, I'm like, I'm thankful for the shampoo and the conditioner. You know, it's like, for me, I had to break it down to the little itty-bitty minute as my day goes on, what I'm grateful for. Today, life is busy. Sometimes I'm not fully aware of all the grateful things that I should be aware of, and that's when I start to feel a little off-kilter. I can let myself go there, but thankfully I don't stay there too long. Because I'm working a program today that, you know, tells me that there's things that I can do that will change, you know, the way that, you know, I'm thinking. And for me, I have that intuition, that gut, that even when I think my motives are good, if something is not feeling right, I don't sit in that. It's like I know exactly what I need to do and what I need to change. You know, I call someone, talk to my sponsor, get to the rooms. You know, there's been a few occasions where, especially early on, I remember once I would always go to the store and I would have a drink to go to the store, and then I'd buy a little bit of something so I could drink it on the way home so that no one at home knew how much I drank. And the first time I went to the grocery store after getting sober, I was having a meltdown. I could not go to the store. I pulled over and started calling, and I was just like, I can't go to the store. And they're like, why? Why not? I'm like, I don't trust myself. I mean, I didn't trust myself to go to the store and not go down that aisle and get something. Today, I'm happy to say, even though I don't like shopping that much at the grocery store, I can go down the aisle. It doesn't bother me. I mean, the book says, you know, that I can go anywhere as long as I'm in fit spiritual condition. I don't have to be afraid of the sordid places. I have a connection today with a higher power that, for once in my life, I always wanted to have a purpose. It's like I was like, what's my purpose? I'm like, my purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. And it's just, it's crazy what gives me chills. It gives me a little teary-eyed because I feel that this is my purpose. I'm here for a reason, despite trying to kill myself, despite trying to drink myself to death. I think I found my place, I found my home, I found my family, and I'm very grateful that I was introduced to this witchcraft, Alcoholics Anonymous. It saved my life. I love every single one of you. Even if I don't know you, I do love you, and I really care about you, and there is a way out. There's a better way of life. It's not about the material things. It's not about everything I have, but it's like everything I feel. And I feel very grateful. I'm happy today. I didn't think I would ever be happy. This happy, joyous, and free. I'm free from this addiction. I'm free from the obsession. And I would have never had that if I hadn't come into AA and sat down and listened. And more than anything, honest, open-mindedness, and willingness. Today it's all about recovery, unity, and service. I thank you for letting me share my story.